Hello, NAPMA members, and thanks for joining us here on the Sounds of Success. We have a very special treat for you today, a humor-filled, interesting, and wisdom-rich interview with a true martial arts legend and an extremely accomplished gentleman, my good friend, Mr. Gene LaBelle. Now, you'll learn a lot about Gene during the interview, but before we get started, I thought I'd set the stage for you just a little and give you some brief history about this remarkable individual. To begin with, Gene LaBelle was exposed to fighting at a very early age. His mother, Eileen Eaton, owned and operated a place called the Olympic Auditorium. The Olympic was built in 1927 for the Olympic Games in 1932. It has housed some of the greatest boxers and wrestlers of all time. Muhammad Ali, Jerry Quarry, Gorgeous George, Sugar Ray Robinson, Andre the Giant, Archie Moore, Sonny Liston, Joe Frazier, Lou Thesz, and way, way too many other greats to mention here. What's interesting is that Gene was raised in this environment, so it's no surprise that he began learning about fighting at a very early age. In fact, he began warming up the mat with legends like these at the tender age of 6. One wrestler in particular by the name of Ed Strangler Lewis started Gene off in the world of grappling. Ed explained that with grappling, you could do just about anything to your opponent. You could hit the guy, do heel locks, ankle locks, arm bars, back locks, neck locks, tweak the nose, or choke him out. Needless to say, Gene took to grappling like a fish takes to water. But when Gene entered his first open judo tournament at the age of 14, he began using many of the grappling skills he had learned. The officials were horrified to see Gene performing illegal grappling moves on his opponents, tossing them into the air and jumping on them, dropping elbows on them, and simply terrorizing his competitors. Gene had to quickly adjust his approach and learn to play by a different set of rules, and so he did. At this point, Gene began working even harder to improve his skills, training every day in martial arts and boxing, and competing in tournaments on the weekends. Gene was gearing up for something big. At the age of 20, he had 14 years of hardcore training from the best in the world, and he set his sights on the National Judo Championship in 1954. Gene tore through the competitors with everything he had. After the smoke cleared, Gene LaBelle was the last man standing. He had won the National AAU Heavyweight Judo Championship and the USA Overall Judo Championship, back to back. Next, Gene decided to try his hand at pro wrestling. All total, he won over 200 trophies, but the highlight of his professional wrestling career was in Amarillo, Texas, when he beat Pat O'Connor for the World's Heavyweight Wrestling Championship. During Gene's more than 25 years of wrestling, he did far more than just wrestle. He also did continuous stunt work for movies and television and still does so today. When it comes to stunt work, Gene's considered one of the top authorities in the world, and he's earned millions doing it. In his ongoing career as an actor and stuntman, Gene has appeared in more than 1,000 movies and TV shows. In fact, Gene's autobiography, which is called The Godfather of Grappling, contains pages and pages and pages of the different movies and television shows that Gene has been involved in during the years. I have to say the list is truly amazing. But most importantly, for our purposes here today, Gene LaBelle is considered one of the greatest martial artists of all time. Even more, he has become widely known as a teacher of champions. Gene has taught grappling to such greats as Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris, Benny the Jet Urakitas, Gokor Chivichian, Ed Parker, Hayward Nishioka, and Bill Superfoot Wallace, just to name a few. Gene LaBelle has made a tremendous contribution to the martial arts community, and though he will stoutly deny it, he is admired and appreciated by nearly all of the greatest fighters alive today, even though he typically shows up to workouts wearing his trademark pink gi. If you ever wondered why Gene wears a pink gi, well, the mystery will be solved for you during this interview, so stay tuned. So NAPMA members, it's my honor to bring you the success secrets of a true living legend and a real treasure of a human being. Here now is Conversations with the Toughest Man Alive, Mr. Gene LaBelle. Gene LaBelle, welcome to the Sounds of Success.
Rob, it's great talking to you. You're a classic in your field and a legend in your own time.
Back at you. I mean, what can I say? It's truly an honor to have you with us here today. I mean, you've been a hero of mine since I was a kid. You've become a mentor and a good friend of mine that I know I could depend on if times get tough. You're a wealth of knowledge and a legend in the eyes of most people listening to this interview. So thanks for being here. For openers, Gene, tell us a little bit about your background in the martial arts.
I'm 104 years old now, as you know, and I started when I was 7. And my mother, who name was Eileen Eaton, if anybody followed the fights, she was inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame. She had an auditorium in Los Angeles called the Olympic Auditorium. And to get rid of me on weekends, she'd send me to the Los Angeles Athletic Club, where they train people for the Olympics. And there were some pros there named Lou Thesz, a world champion.
Mm-hmm, heard of him.
And, there was a couple of them, Ed Strangler Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And they started me off in wrestling or grappling. Now, let me explain you the difference and tell you what happened to me.
Okay.
Wrestler, Mr. Thesz, he'd say, do you want to learn Greco-Roman wrestling? Greco-Roman, that's from the waist up. Do you want to learn freestyle wrestling? That's from the waist up, and you can do tackles and leg downs. Or do you want to do boxing? Or do you want to do savate? That's kicking. Or do you want to do grappling? And I says, well, what's grappling? He says, that's the combination of all of them. And I says, that's what I want to learn. And I'll, in this interview, tell you that there's no particular martial arts that's better than another martial arts. All martial arts are equal. They all have something to offer. Larry Corin, he had a book that's called Egyptian Walls. It was pictures of old Egyptian walls, and it showed a man doing a judo hip throw. He would be doing a karate kick to the face. He would be throwing a punch, which we know as boxing. And that was thousands of years ago. So when somebody says, hey, I invented karate or I invented jiu-jitsu or judo, they improved on it, yes. But they didn't invent it.
No, that stuff's been around for millennia.
Darn near as many years as I have.
I wouldn't go quite that far, Gene. Okay, so you started training in the 30s. Did you ever own your own martial arts school?
Oh, yeah.
How many?
Well, actually, I consider it one. I had a school right around the corner from Paramount Studios in Hollywood, where I got a lot of movie stars.
Oh, that must have been convenient.
And I used to teach for 17 years at L.A. City College. It's, you know, most of my doings are in, except for seminars, are in the Los Angeles area. And a fellow named Hayward Nishioka, who was one of the coaches from the Olympic team and head of Nanka Yudanshikai, which is the head of the Southern California Judo Black Belt Association, he was the head of the athletic department at a few of the colleges, and he says, why don't you teach there for a while? And it doesn't pay, but you're doing a lot of help for the kids. So I went there, and they ended up there 17 years.
Wow, interesting. So what was it like training with you back then? And I ask that question because today schools have just become so commercial. I would assume that your school was probably more of a place for serious training. Would that be accurate?
Now or then?
Both.
Well, then like at the when I had my own school, you have to make money and pay your rent.
Uh-huh.
And when I had the school, it was very interesting. I'd get involved since I was the only one there. I'd had to sell memberships, and you get to know people, and pretty soon you understand some of them have a family, and they can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd let them work out for free. So my place would be packed, and I'd have a heck of a time making the monthly payment.
I've heard that story before.
you move on. Then when I taught at the college, the students would work out there free, and I wouldn't get paid. But you could see, I get a lot of good feelings when you change a person's life.
Oh, yeah.
And there's one person that wanted to do judo and enter these contests, and I says, you're good, but you're not one of the ones. Great. Why don't you finish college and become a lawyer? And that's exactly what he did. He's a successful lawyer now.
Very interesting. Gene, martial arts instructors are leaders by the very nature of what they do for a living. What does it mean, in your opinion, to be a strong leader in the martial arts?
You have to be a good teacher. You have to be considerate. And you must demand respect.
Mm.
I mean, when I teach, even with the kids, they're not allowed to play grab ass, joke around. It's a serious business because it can be dangerous if it's done the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And when I come in, everybody gives respect. And the students, when somebody comes in, they say, how are you? My students say, how are you? Come on, get on the mat, you know? I've been in a lot of martial arts schools and see how they teach. And you, somebody comes in and they're afraid because somebody's throwing a flying crescent kick or throwing a punch or body slamming somebody, and they're afraid. Well, you have to have somebody talk to them and tell them, hey, this is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of life. And that's why the owner or the salesman in the school has to be able to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
Communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Let's look back on a little bit of history for a moment. In 1963, Ed Parker came to your school, and told you about a boxer named Jim Beck, a man who claimed that a professional boxer could easily beat any martial artist. You thought about it and agreed to step into the ring and prove Jim wrong. But upon arrival, you realized that they had pulled a classic bait and switch. Instead of Jim Beck stepping into the ring, you were facing off with Milo Savage, the number 5 ranked light heavyweight boxer in the world. Talk about not getting what you signed up for. Even worse, I understand that Savage was wearing brass knuckles and that he was greased up from head to toe, making it nearly impossible for you to keep a hold of him. This was probably the first mixed martial arts fight of its kind. Gene, tell us a little bit about that fight, how the fight ultimately ended, and how it helped your career. I mean, it had to do wonders for your reputation, right?
Oh, every time you get lucky, it helps your reputation. But just to go over this a little bit, there was an article in a magazine, a big magazine, with color photos and drawings and everything, and it was called Rogue Magazine. And the article was Jim Buck, who's a nice guy, wrote an article and said, called it Judo Karate Bums, and he was offering $1,000 to any martial artist that he couldn't knock out. So, you know, Ed Parker, who I did many seminars with, the Kempo Karate man, great martial artist, really, and a good friend, he came to me one day and he says, hey, showed me this article, and he said, we want somebody to represent the martial arts and fight this man. And I said, well, tell me about it. And he says, well, we went to a meeting. There's over 100 martial arts schools and teachers there. And we decided on you. And I said, why did you decide on me fighting him? He says, because you're the most sadistic bastard I know. And of course I was, I guess. you know, if you're going to get in a fight, make sure that you finish it. Mm-hmm. You know, don't hit him and wait for him to hit you back. But that's a horse of a different color. So he said they're offering $1,000 side bet, and they'll give you $1,000. And I says, $1,000? I'd fight my grandmother first. She'd whip me, as she did a lot. So we went through contracts, and we couldn't have it in Los Angeles, which was my hometown, because the State California Athletic Commission nixed it, mm-hmm. said it's a duel. Now, because of Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor, you could have those things. Mm-hmm. But we ended up going to Salt Lake City, Utah, and about 9 months later, and we did contracts with lawyers and everything. And, of course, if it's their lawyers, they can say anything they want. Like when I got up there, they said I wasn't allowed to kick, and I wasn't allowed, I couldn't kick like a karate guy, and I couldn't strike like a boxer. So I had to do just whatever came to me.
More grappling.
Yeah, well, grappling. I call it grappling. Grappling's a combination of everything. But it was very, very interesting. There was $80,000 made in side bets. I was supposed to get 10% if I win. And the place was packed, and it was the first, to my knowledge, televised mixed martial arts event.
Wow, how about that?
And since then, there's been a lot of them. Antonio Inoki in Japan went against, as you know,
Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali.
That's
Cassius
right.
Clay's Muhammad Ali. And Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali got $6 million, which was big money then. And Inoki got $2 million, and the referee got $5,000.
And I can I guess who the referee was?
all because of the martial arts.
I'm talking to the referee right now.
Right.
That's amazing.
Ding the bell, refereed that bout, and which is prestigious there.
Oh, yeah. So you step into the ring against Milo Savage, and there he is. He's all greased up. He's got brass knuckles. What are you thinking?
When you're brain dead like myself, you don't think of too much. But my coach, Mr. Korn, he says, okay, we're not fighting the guy, and because he's got brass knuckles. And I said, I'll annihilate, mutilate, assassinate him. If brains were measured in Cadillacs, he'd be on roller skates. And so he says, don't joke around, Gene. And I says, what I'm trying to tell you, coach, is I'll fight him his rules, which is kind of stupid, but I did it anyway. And they took a film of it, and you can buy it on my website. It's only 10 minutes long.
Oh, great.
And then you can see who won and how he won.
And that website is, of course, www.GeneLabelle.com. Nobody could possibly forget that.
Yeah, but how do you spell Gene Labelle?
GeneLebell.
.com.
There you go.
You're so, my hero, Rob.
Well, I'm just doing my job. Question. So we're not going to reveal who won this fight. We're going to keep it a mystery.
I would. I've got secrets.
But what I can probably reveal is that the loser of that fight was unconscious for about 20 minutes.
I am not saying. You have to get the video.
Okay, you're tough.
But it wasn't me.
Well,
I've been unconscious all my life.
I hear you. Okay, moving on then. You know, the martial arts industry has evolved tremendously since you began your training in the 30s. Have these changes been positive, negative, or a little bit of each? What do you think?
Well, when we first started training, and you'd go to different gyms to work out, may it be a boxing or a wrestling or a judo gym or anything like that, they're always in the back of a house somewhere.
Mm.
It's like you knock on the door and it's a password. They weren't advertised. And in many ways of life, they were frowned upon. They weren't commercialized on. People did it for fun, a way of life. Now we have big neon signs, big signs. Karate, Kempo, Shotokan, Taekwondo, Judo, wrestling. It's all painted on the front of the building, and the parking's in the back. it's involved, and there's more people involved in the martial arts.
Hmm. Gene, do you have any predictions about the future of the martial arts industry? Where do you see it going?
I think it's going to be straight up.
Yeah, me too.
Why is it going up? Not only because all the martial arts are good, but they're becoming more publicized because of newspapers, television, communications.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, what we have at our school, Gokhar Chavichian and myself, we have the sort of a buddy system. And one guy might bring in two, the two might bring in four, and the four bring in eight. We get a lot of people that are salesmen because they're so thrilled with what they're learning and they feel better. Any exercise gets your lactic acids going and your heart beating, and it should make you last a lot longer.
In your experience, how does the new breed of martial arts fighters differ from those of the past?
Well, I tell you what, you're talking to a prejudiced man, and don't listen to what I say, or listen, then throw it out. I've always been in the theory that if you don't spar, you don't know if it really works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like katas, and I like aerobics, but I find in my life they're not that practical for street fights.
Yeah.
And when my opinion for a teacher, when they say if you learn these katas and or forms, and they're great, but it bothers me when they say, okay, these will work in a street fight. And unless you spar and get out there, I don't believe they'll work.
Yeah,
that's just my opinion, and a lot of teachers will think different. It's just like you got to be legitimate, as a guy named Hulk Hogan says, you got to be a really.
A really, okay.
And that's the biggest compliment I've had was he and Lou Fizz said, I'm a really. Which means, you know, you're the real deal.
Yeah.
And you don't have to get hurt if you have the proper safety equipment on. You can do light sparring. You don't have to draw blood. But the harder you work, the better you get.
Very interesting. You have worked with some of the toughest and most talented boxers, martial artists, and professional wrestlers of all time. What's the difference between a good fighter and a great fighter?
A good fighter, well, first of all, you have to be coordinated. I don't care how many times you get on a track and try to run 100 yards. there are people that just are better athletes.
Mm-hmm.
But I find out, and this is very important, the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Yeah.
That's in any vocation or avocation.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Mm-hmm. What's the most important thing that martial arts training has taught you?
Martial arts training has taught me respect.
Mm.
And it's not all about you. Not I, me. It's what you can learn from other people and what you can teach other people. And everybody comes from a different environment. They have different desires and inhibitions. You treat everybody like you want to be treated.
I understand your point, though, and you're right. I think they say when you're going up the ladder, you know, you go past everybody and you come past those same people on the way down, and they may be carrying knives.
Well, that's true. But with me, I can burn my bridges behind me because I never retreat. Just kidding.
That's pretty good. Talk to us a little bit about discipline. What thoughts cross your mind when you think about discipline?
Discipline is respect.
Mm.
That's why, if for you people that have been in the service, in the Army, Navy, Marines, they have what they call boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And they treat you like garbage.
Mm.
But when you get out into the real world, you've been there, you know? You don't have to go into shock.
Mm-hmm.
When a teacher tells you something, you say where and how much, and you salute them, because it's a learning process. Again,
mm-hmm.
it's a learning process.
Mm-hmm.
You learn from your parents, and you learn from your teachers, and then you make your own decisions. You can end up being a bank robber, or you can be a very successful businessman
mm-hmm.
or woman. And I do highly recommend for everybody that's listening, mostly the young people, I put it this way, and I'm just making a figure. If you finish grammar school, you'll make $5 an hour.
Mm.
If you finish high school, you'll make $15 an hour. You finish college and you're making $100 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily those figures are anywhere close.
Yeah.
But the more education you learn or have or gain, the more successful you'll be. And it's important, and we'll get on to this later, why you have to be successful.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. I mean, after all, the essence of what NAPMA is all about is education. And I know that your education will determine how high you will climb in life. I'm a firm believer in that. Gene, clearly you trained really, really hard when you were coming up. In fact, I heard you used to run around a track throwing a tire. You'd sprint to the tire, pick it up, and then throw it again, and you would do this for miles. Very interesting. Describe for us what your training regimen was like when you were in your prime, training to become the Gene LaBelle we all know as the incredible fighter.
And best looking.
And the best looking. That's right, the best looking, too.
Well, Rob, put down that glass of wine. what I do, and it's a thing that I started, since I'm a motorcycle buff, I take a motorcycle tire, not a car tire because they're too heavy, put on gloves, and I throw them forwards, I throw them backwards, I throw them with one arm, I throw them with two arms, and I'll go around the track like at the high school or the college, and what I try to do is not throw them just using my arms. I go easy, like a golf swing, where you're using your shoulders, your arms, your back, your hips, your legs, everything at once. And the reason this is important, you're using all your muscles. Now, say you're 160 pounds and you're going against a 250-pounder.
Sure.
And he uses his arms, and you're using your whole body. That equalizes you.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, and when I won the heavyweight in the Nationals 2 years, Judo Nationals, I weighed under 170 pounds. And so in the finals, when I won my weight, which was a heavyweight, and I had to go against to get the overall champion, I went against the 180-pound guy both years, and they were both heavier than me.
Mm.
But they said a good man could beat a good small man, so they thought I was heavier. But I wasn't. I looked like a toothpick.
Huh.
Now I look like a whale out of water.
I don't know about that, but so your training regimen, I guess, say when you were maybe in your 20s, how hard did you train?
Very, very hard. That was my life. I did boxing in the, I did road work in the morning, did boxing, went to school. Afterwards, I went to the wrestling classes. I went to the judo classes. And then, of course, when I say the different classes, I do a lot of aerobics and exercise. I used to do 1,000 sit-ups every other day.
Whoa.
Then 1,000 push-ups every other day.
Whoa.
Without stopping.
Wow.
And, you know, then we didn't have... in the Depression, the TVs, it wasn't the Depression, as you know, but I never looked at a TV, didn't listen to the radio.
Yeah.
I said, a man that doesn't think of the future doesn't have a future.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to be the best in the world. And not everybody can be the best in the world. Not everybody can be president of the United States. But if you work hard, you've got a better shot at it.
Mm-hmm. So you worked hard, you trained hard, you were 100% committed to it. What were some of the titles you won?
Oh, amateur titles. I won... famous ones is I won the Nationals a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
In judo, 1954 and 55, and the
mm-hmm.
overall championships. Now they don't have the overall championships, just overall meant all the weights went together to round robin.
Mm-hmm.
They thought it helped too much to have the bigger guy has the advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Which in most cases it's true. But one of my friends and students named Hayward Nishioka, who's the head of the judo group, and he was a coach of the Olympic team, he won the 160-pound class, and then he beat the heavyweight.
Mm.
And the other, and he was the overall champion 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he worked hard.
See.
He was a fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what NAPA teaches, am I correct?
It does. It teaches people to work hard and stay focused. Gene, you've worked with legends like Ed Strangler Lewis and Archie Moore and Sugar Ray Robinson. I mean, I was flipping through your book last night, The Godfather of Grappling, which is your only authorized autobiography. And I mean, there's pictures of you in there with, you know, Muhammad Ali and Elvis Presley and Carl Gotch and Ed Parker and Bruce Lee and Andre the Giant, Lou Thesz, Hulk Hogan, George Superman Reeves, Burt Reynolds, Chuck Norris, you know, James Caan, and many, many, many other superstars and celebrities and people of notoriety. Is there any special story about one of these greats that you'd like to share with our audience today?
Well, you name a fighter. Like Archie Moore was the light heavyweight champion, and boxing, and for years, and he fought Muhammad Ali for the heavyweight championship. Sugar Ray Robinson was, they consider many of them the best pound fighter that ever lived. And I had the privilege of working out with some of them. I was a kid, and I was in the gym with Sugar Ray Robinson. He walked in, and his sparring partner didn't show up that day. And the head of the Main Street gym, he said, "Hey, anybody want to spar with the Sugar Man?" And wow. Being brain dead and retarded, I said, "Hey, how about me? I'm gonna get up there and box the world champion." So I, next thing I knew, I was in the ring, and they were lacing the gloves on me. And he says, "Well, it's a 3-minute round." So in 3 minutes, you know, I'm a teenager then. I threw maybe 150 punches, none of which landed. And the Sugar Man, he hit me about 300 times, you know, which is like one every second. Not hard, just he didn't take advantage of me, but he made an ass out of me. And then I learned, hey, you got to fight somebody better than you to learn. Well, it was one round. And if we fought two rounds, he would have hit me 600 times.
Probably.
But then we went over and laid on a mat and did the medicine ball throw. And he was in a fanatic of condition to his wind. And so when he threw the medicine ball, it was like doing sit-ups. And I used to, that I could do, but and compete with him. But the boxing is a learning. That's the point there is you should learn all martial arts. You can't, and they say, oh, this is no good. My sport is better than your sport. Well, it's like my dad is better than your dad.
Yeah.
All dads are good if they have love and caring in their heart.
Yeah. So so you've made it pretty clear, not only just now, but in some of our previous conversations, that you respect all styles of martial arts, and you encourage people to try the different styles.
Absolutely. I've tried every style that I know. Some I like better than others. And my school, and or our school, Gokhar Chavichan and myself in L.A., we invite people from all arts, not to prove that we're better than them, although I am better looking, but you teach me your techniques and I'll teach you mine.
Yeah.
And anybody that's listening that want to come to our place, the first workout is free if you happen to be passing the San Fernando Valley area. The address is 11044 Burbank Boulevard. Come by and take a free workout. Tell them Gene LaBelle sent you.
Wow, that's very generous. And Gene, how many nights
or
a week
Rob.
Are you? Or Rob, of course. You know, they all know me out there in that area. Yeah, right. Question, how many times a week are you out there at the school, Gene?
I commit myself to one day a week, which is on a Monday. Now, all our classes are in the evenings. But when Gokhar goes to Europe to give seminars, he goes to Armenia and Russia, I might take over the classes.
Yeah.
I work for free. That's bad business. But I've made millions of dollars doing stunt work. And that's my living, and I've helped the students out. So I enjoy doing this. A man that enjoys his work never goes to work. So it's fun to me. And we're doing this radio interview on a Monday, and I'm going down there tonight.
I see. You know,
and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'll bet you are. You know, I was looking through your book again yesterday, and I've been through this book now repeatedly. I've enjoyed it so much. And by the way, I recommend to every single person listening to this to pick up a copy of Gene's autobiography. You can find it on his website. And by the way, it would also make a great pro shop item for you, The Godfather of Grappling. But going through the book, I noticed that you've been exposed to hundreds and hundreds of very famous people over many decades. Have you noticed any common characteristics about these individuals that helped them to achieve such a high level of success? In other words, is there a common secret to success? What do you think?
Well, I have to copy from you, Rob, and Napa. People that are liked, that's why I say respect.
Mm-hmm.
They last longer. There's movie stars that say, I, me, and pretty soon, after a few years, where are they? Well, if people don't like them, they move on.
Mm-hmm.
So you see people with talent, but non-respect and not considering other people, pretty soon they're out of the loop.
So some of these top movie stars like Elvis Presley and different people that you have been surrounded by for so many years, you say that, you know, one of the secrets to their success is their likability?
Well, Elvis was a superstar.
Yeah.
And I worked with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he was one of the guys, you know, puts his arms around you, you know, does a couple of moves. He was a karate guy.
Yeah.
That worked with Ed. He worked with Ed Parker.
Sure, he did.
He was a good martial artist.
Mm-hmm.
But I was working on a movie with him, and he gave me a $100 bill. He gave a lot of $100 bills out, you know, and he gave me one, and I didn't have any money then, so I said, "Oh my goodness, I was paying $45 a month rent." I says, "I am going to eat tonight," and I went out and I had a good steak dinner.
Oh no.
Now, if I had a brain in my head, instead of this room temperature IQ, I would have saved it, had him autograph it, which he would have done, and now it'd probably be worth $50 million, a $100 bill with Elvis's autograph on
that's
it.
That's right.
I could have sold it on eBay.
That's probably true, Gene. But you take a guy like him, or, you know, I mean, God, you've worked with everybody. Rodney Dangerfield. I mean, you've been in, what, about 1,000 movies and TV shows, and that's a real number. What makes people so successful? Have you noticed anything?
Clean living. No, it's being liked. Now, I've been doing stunts for 50 years, and I'm good at it. But there's better, you know? And there's better that are not working that much. They have to like you.
Mm.
And that's why when you give respect for people, to me, I call them family.
Mm-hmm.
I send out over 1,000 Christmas cards every year.
Whoa.
Because these people are family.
I got one.
You got one with a patch on
that's
it.
That's right, I did.
The last 35 years, I make up a different patch every year, and
yeah,
usually to do with stunts or the martial arts.
Yeah.
And I send them out as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
They cost me a lot of money, and I sent them out one year, many, many years ago, and the next year a regular Christmas card. And so a couple of people says, "Well, you should send a patch out."
Mm-hmm.
So meanwhile, I spend thousands of dollars every year on Christmas cards. Not that I want to, because I am cheap, or my mother used to say, inexpensive.
There you go. That's more euphemistic.
But, you know, people like something, and the best feeling in the world is making somebody happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I give a lot of time to kids and underprivileged people.
Yeah.
The greatest feeling in the world is to make somebody that wouldn't be happy, happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then again, when somebody begs for money and they're young and they're on the street and you know they're younger than you and they've got muscles all over, to me, I'd give them a fishing pole, not a fish.
That's right.
I'd give them a fishing pole and not a fish.
Yeah.
I'd give them a job, but if you want to eat, you got to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's
yeah.
no free lunches, Rob, as you know, as you told me mm-hmm. for many years, mm-hmm. no free lunches.
Yeah, and sometimes I've unfortunately learned that the hard way, but that's a whole other story. You've been involved, as I just mentioned, in literally about 1,000 TV shows, movies, all kinds of entertainment venues. What advice would you give to anyone listening who's interested in doing stunt work or becoming an actor today?
Get a job that's from 9 to 5 that you get a check, a paycheck every week. There's a lot of people that take acting lessons, and they do summer stock, and they're very good.
Mm-hmm.
But getting a job is something else. You get an agent, they might send you out on a interview once a month, maybe twice a month,
mm-hmm.
and you get about one out of every 30 interviews, you get a job.
Wow.
The thing I like about stunt work is you're usually hired by another stuntman, the stunt coordinator, or a director or producer that you know. And it takes years and years and years to get involved with another, with a producer or a director. That means you have to work a lot of shows with them and let them know or see that you do a professional job,
mm-hmm.
and they need you more than you need them.
I see.
And but now, when I first started in the stunt business in 1955, you know, there was maybe 50 stuntmen in all of Hollywood.
Mm.
Now there are thousands.
Yeah.
In 1961, we started the Stuntmen's Association of Motion Pictures, and all the good stuntmen belong to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have, in Los Angeles, four stunt groups, the Stunt Association, mm-hmm. very good, Stunts Unlimited, very good,
mm-hmm.
Brand X, great stuntmen in that, and of course I like them because most of them are motorcycle riders like myself,
mm-hmm.
and they got the ISA, which is another group, and there's good stuntmen in all those groups,
mm-hmm.
and if you're lucky enough to get in those groups, you got a better chance of getting work,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
it takes years and years and years, and so you got to learn so many things in stunts. You have to learn all the martial arts, which takes a lifetime. You got to learn fire, horsework, motorcycles, cars. Not, I have people call me, well, I drive real fast on the street. And I says, well, don't get any tickets. You got to learn how to do 180s, 360s, reverse 180s. You have to learn how to ski a car, drive on two wheels. You got to learn racing. You got to learn precision driving.
Mm-hmm.
It all takes a lifetime. You just can't go in there and say, hey, I'm a good athlete.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't fill your cup.
Yeah, sounds like it's highly competitive.
Very.
Yeah, and a lot of people trying to get in on the same action these days is what it sounds like to me. You said you started martial arts training in the 30s, so, you know, with some simple math, one could probably figure out, Gene, you're in your 70s now.
Mid-70s.
Well, I wasn't going to go that far, but since you brought
it
up.
I am, and I've been rode hard and put away wet.
That's pretty good. So my question to you then is, has martial arts kept you young or not?
Well, my face looks like 30 miles of bad road. the body isn't, I got a nice body, but the thing is, I wear clothes all the time, and they can't tell that I have a six-pack. But they, you know, the face, well, I say my parents gave me the face. Boxing gave me this nose. Just kidding.
So has the martial, I mean, because, you know, most guys, in their 70s wouldn't be out grappling with people on a Monday night like you're going to do tonight.
Well, I do it more than that. I try to get in 4 or 5 days a week of something or other.
Yeah.
Whatever, from racing motorcycles to the martial arts. I love the martial arts because at range you can do it inside.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy that doesn't think of the future doesn't have one.
Yeah.
And people, when they get out of school, they don't have to go to the gymnasium class or the gym class, and they get that beer belly.
Yeah.
And you know, they wonder why they have a heart attack at 45.
Exactly.
Or 50.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to if you don't use it, you lose it. You got to mm-hmm. exercise whatever you decide to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to eat properly. That I can't emphasize that enough.
Now,
you are what you eat.
I don't know if Bill Wallace would agree with that.
No, Bill Wallace is one of the great martial artists of all time. He's a judo black belt. He's a classic in his field with karate. I love him. And he's a world-class golfer. But all he does is eat hamburgers, you know. And he says, well, in the old cartoons, if you read the funny books, Popeye and Pluto and all those guys, Humphrey, they all ate hamburgers. And he keeps on eating hamburgers, and he looks good.
Yeah.
But I think it's because of the martial arts,
yeah.
the exercises he does.
Yeah.
And I've had him do seminars at my school. He's come in and I say, hey, you want to show something for 5 minutes? And he'll show something for 2 hours. And people are entertained because of NAPA and learning how to entertain people.
Yeah.
You not only have to teach them, but you have to entertain them to keep their interest going. Yeah.
So martial arts has kept you young, and I think just being active and ambitious and being future-focused has kept you young, and obviously that'll continue for many, many years to come. Gene, what are your thoughts on the MMA craze that's currently sweeping the country, and can those guys tie their shoelaces?
Most of them are very, very good, but the ones that are great are the ones that do all different kinds of martial arts. May it be Muay Thai, which is hitting with the elbows and the knees and everything, boxing, freestyle wrestling to take a guy down, Sambo leg locks, judo arm bars and chokes. You know, you got to do a little bit of everything.
They're eclectic, and, right? They're
this,
eclectic.
Next week I'm going to Vegas. I'm a judge in there in the MMA.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, being a fanatic in the martial arts, as many of your listeners are, and they watch the MMA,
mm-hmm.
watch and see people's mistakes. Watch not only to be entertained,
mm-hmm.
but watch to learn.
Great advice. Mm-hmm. Great advice. On a side note, some of the things that you do athletically are absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, you throw people around like they were rag dolls. I've seen you wrestling with bears, choking out a whole line of people one at a time, which, by the way, is really fascinating. You just put them to sleep one after the next. Do you have superhuman strength, or would you attribute these things more to technique?
A little bit of everything. Realistically, if the car is out of gas, the car won't run, right?
Right.
So if you have to run from here to the end of the block and you can't make it,
mm-hmm.
you're in bad condition.
Mm-hmm.
And I always believe all your life, as long as you can, you should do as much exercise as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean burn yourself to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean keep in good condition. For the older people, they should walk. For the younger people, they should run. And you can't beat an opponent if you're out of gas.
Right.
You got to have the. To me, the most important thing is your conditioning your wind.
Yeah, that's actually one of the main things that Joe Lewis taught me, is that very thing you're talking about right
great,
there.
Great teacher and a fantastic world champion karate fighter.
Yeah.
Good human being.
Always
too.
In great, great condition. Mm-hmm.
A lot, all the champions that you ever see, like Sugar Ray Robinson, Muhammad Ali in boxing, Matt Hughes, and a lot of the fellows in the mixed martial arts, and the track and field guys, they're all, their condition is where it's at. Mm-hmm. And if they're not in condition, they take them out. In professional football, you see people play and, oh, they're out of gas.
Yeah.
So they take them out and substitute them.
Mm-hmm.
Condition is your life. The only initial investment, Rob, as you know, in life is your body. Mm-hmm. If you smash your car, you buy a new car.
Right.
Or fix it up. If you smash your motorcycle, you fix it up or buy a new car. If you smash your body, it's gone.
Yeah, that's in big trouble.
That's
yeah.
why I say stunts are dangerous. I've seen people killed right in front of me, maimed and crippled right in front of me. It's dangerous.
Wow. You've kind of touched upon this already, but I'm going to ask you point blank. In your view, how much of a correlation is there between money and happiness?
Well, I always say money isn't everything. 2% health.
How do you really feel about it, Gene? Come on.
Well, to me, I've got a half a dozen cars, and they're all paid for, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I can drive my Jeep. I can drive my four-wheel truck. I can drive my Cadillac. I can drive my Honda. And they're all paid for. I don't worry about nowadays insurance because I've got the money. I've got a nice house. I've got a ranch up in the hills. The more education you have, the more money you'll make, and the easier life. I have a maid. I'm building another room in this house now because I have the money. And you know what I owe it all to?
What's that?
Martial arts.
Wow.
If it wasn't for the martial arts, I wouldn't have been a stuntman. I narrated sports programs for 15 years, wrestling here in the Los Angeles area. Why? Because of my knowledge of wrestling and the martial arts. I owe it all to the martial arts. And I know you teach, I was more of a competitor than I was a teacher.
Yeah.
But you can teach, Napa and Rob can teach much more better than I can, and my God, if they never see the back of their neck again, they better listen to you, or I'll have to burn their house down.
or at least just choke them out or something.
A win's a win. They don't remember in 10 years how you beat the guy. They just remember that you did beat him.
Yeah, no doubt. Some would say that trust and trustworthiness are among the highest of all human principles. What has life taught you about trust?
Well, as a referee, they tell you, or if I'm refereeing, I say, keep your guard up at all times.
Mm-hmm.
You trust your parents. You trust your teachers. And then when you're through taking your classes or your parents are gone and your teachers are gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're in life, you have to make your own decisions. Now, decisions are very important. Get a study going to work and learning things that you enjoy. And I said this before, a man that enjoys his work never goes to work.
Mm-hmm.
And you can either end up being successful, like because of the martial arts, I'm successful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to worry. I can take care of my family when I get old. If you make a lot of money or enough money to be comfortable,
mm-hmm.
when you get old, you can take care of your family, your kids, your grandkids. Mm-hmm. And when I say family, I have lots of friends
mm-hmm.
that are not blood, but they're family.
I see.
And if I'm in a position to help them, I do, because I believe charity begins at home. You help the people that are good people, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's probably why so many people have such a high level of respect for you. In fact, I don't know anybody that doesn't respect you, Gene. And I don't just say that, I really mean it. On that note, what's the best way to gain the respect of others and keep it?
Give respect. That's very simple. Respect, to me, well, Gokar and I, we have a respect in the dojo.
Mm-hmm.
We call it an attitude adjustment. And I have a book with over 900 holds on it that you can get through the website. And you learn an attitude adjustment. In other words, if a guy comes in with a chip on his shoulder, you literally give him an attitude adjustment, and maybe he'll go to sleep for a while, or you don't do damage. You just make him so he's sore for a few days, and he'll either come back and with a smile on his face and say, "Hey, Sensei or Sifu, I'm here to learn, not to be a wise butt."
So in other words, you might give him some flying lessons.
Oh, I give him flying lessons, get him arm bars, leg locks, choke him out. But they have to be really out of line to deserve an attitude adjustment. It's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm,
but
understand.
It's nice to be good at the martial arts, so if somebody comes and attacks you or your family, you can take care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a real strong sense of security there, isn't there?
Yes, and that's why I respect you, Rob, so much, because you can take care of yourself and you teach people, and all the people that you're involved with are good teachers, and they teach people how to take care of themselves and take care of their body, keep their body in good health. And the more you train, the less sicknesses you have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, isn't that the truth? You know, I go back again to your autobiography, which I have right here in front of me. And by the way, thank you for the nice inscription on the inside. That means a lot to me, and I'll treasure that. But after looking through this book again, you know, one of the things that amazed me is, you know, the amount of things that you've accomplished along the way. I mean, you were a judo champ, an unlimited fighter, an expert witness, a professional wrestler, a teacher.
Champion. I was in the book, you'll see I was world champion for 12 seconds.
Until
I got disqualified.
I read that, but that's again a different story. But you were—I mean, come on—you're a judo champ, an author. You know, you've been a TV announcer, an actor, a stuntman, a motorcycle expert. I could go on and on and on.
A dozen Hall of Fames in different walks of life.
Yeah, it's amazing how much you've accomplished. So after all that, I have to ask you. Can you share with us one of your best-kept secrets of success? What do you do?
Clean living. No. I say you're alive for 60 or 70 years, maybe 80 years, but you're dead for 2 or 3 million.
At least.
So you pass through this world but once.
Mm-hmm.
Any good that you can do, do not neglect it nor defer it. Because you won't pass this way again. In other words, don't just do for yourself, do for other people. And you'll find the more education you have, the more you're able to do for other people. And I think that's my way of life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I certainly don't want this interview to be sterile or anything, but I mean, geez, you must be strong in the areas of time management and just focusing and working hard. You got to be, because you couldn't have done all you did if you weren't real focused. Would I be correct?
Well, you have to be focused. I mean, that's what you teach, and you're my hero. You know, I love your books. Of course, you sent me your book, and, you know, I'm the only one that you never charge, because they're worth a lot of money.
$24.95.
That's like stealing it so cheap. You better send me a couple more books so I can read them in each room and put them on the wall.
You've got a deal, Gene.
With all seriousness, the book you wrote is very learning. It's a learning process.
Yeah.
And you have to keep an open mind, and you'll be a better human being.
On a different topic, as we wind this interview down, you know, you're considered by many to be one of the greatest submission grapplers of all time, as well as the toughest man alive. But yet humor seems to be a very big part of your persona. You've had me laughing right throughout this whole interview and every time we've spoken. What can you tell us about not taking life too seriously?
Well, that's very, very important. You have to enjoy life. You relax. You know how you get ulcers? Because of worrying.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm mad at somebody and I'm up at night, oh, God, I can't sleep. This son of a gun ripped me off for so many hundreds or thousands of dollars. You know what? It doesn't hurt the person that ripped you off. It hurts you. So he did the bad thing, and you're suffering for it. So you do what you're best, and I always put it this way. I give everybody a chance. Not that I'm judge or jury, but I give a person a chance. And if he does me dirt once, shame on him. If he does me dirt twice, shame on me. In other words, I personally, Gene LaBelle, does not give a man a second chance. Let him go somebody else and prove themselves that they're good human beings. Doesn't mean a man can't change. But I don't want to go through aggravation while he's in the process.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that. And you've got too many other good people that you can surround yourself with, no question there. Gene, at this point in the game and after all you've accomplished, is there anyone who you still look up to?
I look up to anybody that can teach me anything. I have an open mind. I have a grandson that's 11 years old, can teach me how to use the computer. Don't say, hey, I can beat this guy up and so he can't teach me anything. Have an open mind and learn as much as you can in life. It's very important. You know, a lot of people in my neck of the woods, there's a lot of Armenians and Hispanic people here, and they say, oh boy, these guys are idiots. They can't speak English. No, they speak broken English, but they also speak two or three languages.
Wow, good point.
Yeah.
Good point. You know, and before we did this interview, you and I talked, and I promised you I wouldn't ask you questions, you know, like what's your favorite flavor of ice cream, and you asked me not to ask you what your favorite move was in the martial arts. And
all of them. All of them. I give you the secret.
What?
A little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything. But some of my questions now, I told you, might be a little bit deep, and here's one of them. You know, we're all mortal. How do you want to be remembered? What's going to be Gene LaBelle's legacy?
Well, let's word it this way. My students are my legacy. No man ever dies until he's forgotten. So I'll be remembered through my students and their students. In other words, I believe I've helped. This, I don't mean to be conceited, but I helped change a lot of the martial arts. So if because I get all the martial arts together and add it to the many books I have written, my students they'll say, hey, Jean LaBelle did it this way. Of course, it'll be 100 years from now.
Yeah.
In other words, if you don't leave your spot with either family, kids, or an art, maybe building cars, motorcycles, buildings, you improve the life for the next person that comes along. Mm-hmm. I would like to be remembered that I helped one phase of a person's life.
Hmm. And that will happen, no doubt. But my question to you is there will there ever be another guy who walks around with a pink gi?
I should tell that story real quick. Like, I'm not from San Francisco. When I was in Japan, I was in a judo tournament, and this was a long time ago, and they used to wash your uniforms, which they call judo gis, and they didn't have the fancy washing machines they do now. They did it by hand, and my gi came back pink. So some geisha girl must have cleaned it with her laundry. And so I went into a tournament that evening, and the next day in the Mainichi newspapers, it said Daikon wins, which is either a white or a pink radish. And I thought they were talking about my red hair, because then I had bright red hair. And no, Gomenasai, excuse me, it was your uniform, which nowadays we have patches all over our uniforms. Then you weren't allowed to, you're supposed to have a white uniform with no patches. And anyway, it came by pink, and everybody was teasing me. And since I was a little bit sadistic then, I kept on wearing it, because when a guy says, hey, you got a pink gi, sissy, and so I'd smash him to the ground. And that was sort of, excuse the expression, a sexual release. You know, it's tough being a sadistic bastard, but somebody has to do it. And you can cut that part out.
I think we should leave that part.
Okay, well, it's true. You know, sometimes not everybody walks on water. I certainly don't walk on water. And the last guy that walked on water, I think they killed.
Yep, they sure did.
And God bless anybody that takes care of other people, you know, mm-hmm. and be considerate. And teachers are my heroes, you know, and if you can learn from them,
yeah,
not only be entertained, but learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're my heroes, too, because they're really the driving force behind the next generation, which is the kids. My final question to you, my good friend, and I ask this of all my special guests here on The Sounds of Success, what's your definition of success?
A full stomach and a roof over my head.
Okay.
And realistically, this is redundant, but a guy that doesn't think of the future doesn't have one.
Yeah.
Okay. While you're young, work hard. Whatever you want to be, a martial arts teacher or a carpenter, be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll make more money. You'll be more respected. Money is just an ad to make life easier.
Mm-hmm.
You can get better cars, better doctors, better lawyers, better everything if you have the money.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody can be rich like you, Rob.
Oh, please.
Please, that's it.
We think I'm like Elvis. I go around giving people $100 bills.
Well,
maybe I should start.
You gave me a picture of a dollar bill, but that had my face on it. That's how old I am.
That's right.
I tell you something. You tease about this, but when I say a full stomach and a roof over your head, I like fast cars. So I have a fast car. I got a sports car. I like trucks. I have a truck. I've got a couple of trucks. One with a four-wheel drive for snow. Mm-hmm. I've got four-wheel motorcycles. I can have those things because I worked hard when I was young to get more knowledge. And see, through the martial arts, I not only became a martial arts teacher, a stuntman. Through that, I became an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I became a sportscaster. I've written books. I wear many hats.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have money coming in for most all of them, mm-hmm. some more than others. But I try to, in my waning years, make life easier for me,
mm-hmm.
and comfortable. So I can't emphasize how important it is for these young guys that are opening martial arts schools or any other business, work hard when you're first starting out,
mm-hmm.
so you can work easier as years go by.
Now that right there is some really good advice. Wow. Fantastic. And Gene, and for all of you listening actually out there, and this CD has been sent to 24 different countries around the world as far as the Kingdom of Bahrain. So Gene, people are going to be listening to this in their computers and in their cars truly all over the world. I want all of you to know how special of an opportunity this was to have so much of Gene LaBelle's time and for him to share his incredible wisdom with us today. I mean, I've truly felt like a kid in a candy store here, but like all good things, we must bring this interview to a close. Gene, we're going to have a DVD teaching segment by you on the NAPMA Innovations DVD very soon, as well as maybe some bonus footage and some other nuggets of wisdom from you that we will get out to all the NAPMA members as we go forward. So that having been said, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the wisdom and knowledge that you've given us here today. This has been a fantastic interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Rob. God bless all the people that are listening.